thank you for joining us. Israel continues with its genocidal onslaught on Gaza, killing more Palestinians in its indiscriminate air and artillery strikes. In the latest attack, strike on the east of Gaza City left 3 civilians dead. 2 more Palestinians were also killed in the Buraj refugee camp as the regime's artillery shelled the area. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, more than 44,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed in the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza since October last year. It also warned about the deteriorating situation of medical facilities in the besieged territory. Our correspondent in Deir al-Balah, Moti Abu Masabeh, gave us an update earlier on the Israeli strikes on the blockaded strip. Let's take a listen.
As you know, today was another bloody day for the Palestinian people in different parts of Gaza Strip, whereas the Israeli occupation forces carried on their brutal attacks against multiple areas of Gaza Strip, particularly the northern part of Gaza Strip, which is still smoldering under the ongoing genocidal campaign targeting every corner of the northern section of the besieged enclave. We are talking about constant attacks that are still targeting Kamal Adwan Hospital in Beit Lahia City. As you know, over the past couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces intensified and renewed their attacks against Kamal Adwan Hospital. According to Dr. Hussam Abu Safiya, the Director General of the hospital, that the Israeli quadcopter drones dropped at least 5 bombs targeting the entrance of the hospital. Needless to mention that for the last three days in a row, the Israeli occupation forces have been attacking the upper floors and the entrance of Kamal Adwan Hospital. Several Palestinian paramedics and Palestinian patients were reportedly unconfirmed wounded as a result of those constant bombardments and attacks targeting the hospital. Needless to mention that Kamal Adwan Hospital is still the only functioning hospital in the northern part of Gaza Strip. It is still grappling with these catastrophic conditions inflicted by the Israeli occupation forces, whereas those attacks are still systematic against the hospital.
The Gaza Health Ministry says hospitals in the Gaza Strip have only 2 days before they run out of key fuel supplies. The warning comes after the World Health Organization expressed grave concern about the medical facilities in the Gaza Strip. The WHO warned it's getting harder and harder to send aid into the blockaded Palestinian territory. Hospitals in Gaza need the fuel to keep their power generators running. The generators provide electricity for their key services. The UN's humanitarian coordinator for Gaza also earlier said the delivery of critical aid, including food, water and fuel, across Gaza is grinding to a halt. The official said Israel has been barring commercial imports into the territory for 6 weeks now, while aid convoys have been subject to armed looting. Palestinians in Gaza have renewed their calls for a permanent ceasefire. This comes on the anniversary of a truce that brought about the cessation of hostilities for a week. Ahmed Najjar reports.
It has been a year since a 4-day humanitarian pause was declared in the Gaza Strip. At the time, hopes were high that this could finally bring an end to the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza. However, all hopes were dashed after the Israeli regime resumed attacking the besieged territory. Now, 1 year on, there is no end in sight to the onslaught as the Israeli regime passes ahead with its attacks.
The bombings we are hearing are a clear example of the Israeli terror that has not stopped for over a year, and the regime still refuses to end its genocidal campaign. A year ago, we thought that this genocide ended, but all we have is more suffering.
Palestinians say the Israeli regime should heed international calls and stop its aggression in Gaza to allow the displaced families to return to their homes.
We were very pleased with last year's truce announcement. We thought and hoped that it would put an end for this onslaught. But here we are, after an entire year, still waiting for the moment a permanent ceasefire is announced again. We are exhausted and just want to return to our homes in northern Gaza.
Since October last year, the Israeli regime has rejected all ceasefire deals and hampered all efforts to put an end to the war.
Those against?
The U.S. this week vetoed the U.N. Security Council resolution that called for a ceasefire in Gaza. The draft resolution aimed for an immediate, unconditional, and permanent ceasefire in Gaza, alongside a demand for the release of all Israeli captives held by Hamas. The measure received 14 votes in favor, with the U.S. the sole member to reject it.
1 year ago, Gazans held into fragile hope that the Israeli genocide was finally coming to an end. However, today they are left grappling with uncertainty as they navigate the harsh realities of the current situation. They find themselves asking if they will ever breathe that long-awaited sigh of relief again. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
Welcome back. Tehran says U.S. covert and overt obstructions and bullying in international bodies has allowed Israel to commit atrocity crimes in occupied Palestine. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman made the remark in a social media post on X. Ismail Baghaei's comment came in reaction to the International Criminal Court's issuance of arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister and the ousted war minister. He said Tehran welcomes any step to serve justice and end the Israeli regime's impunity for genocide. Baghaei said full and immediate implementation of these arrest warrants will test the effectiveness of the international justice system. He also hoped that this late decision would not be manipulated through abuse of process. The spokesman said Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant's indictment should have included genocide, which he said is manifest. The Israeli regime has intensified its violent attacks on Palestinian cities across the occupied West Bank. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Nick Ahmed, joined us earlier for more details about the strikes on Palestinians.
Since the hours of the day and the hours of last night, the IOF has continued raiding Palestinian cities and performing attacks on Palestinians and Palestinian cities and villages. Now, as we speak, a raid is going on in Hussein village near Bethlehem in the middle of the West Bank, where reportedly clashes occurred between Palestinian youth, Palestinian young men, and the raiding forces to the area of Hussein. The area of Hussein has been facing a lot of actions lately, especially lately after the declaration and the announcement that has been made by the Israeli government of seizing and confiscating a large amount of the of this village's land, which is considered to be a village that that lives on agriculture and cultivating lands. So it's not only seizing lands, but also cutting off all life support and economic bases to that area in the middle of the West Bank. Not only in Hussein, but also the IOF has just raided Doura city to the north of to the south of Al Khalil.
Hezbollah has fired more rockets and missiles towards Israeli targets in retaliation for the regime's ongoing aggression against Lebanon and the genocide in Gaza. The Lebanese resistance group says its fighters have launched rockets at several military targets in Manara, Malkiya, and Kiryat Shemona settlements. A missile salvo struck a gathering of Israeli forces in the Dovov barracks in the northern occupied Palestinian territories. The resistance group also claimed responsibility for the missile attacks that hit two strategic military bases in Haifa, one used by the Israeli Air Force technicians and the other, the Stella Maris base, used by the regime for maritime surveillance. Meanwhile, in southern Lebanon, an Israeli Merkava tank was hit by the group's guided missiles, leaving its crew members killed and injured. At least six Israeli troopers have reportedly committed suicide in recent months due to psychological problems triggered by the prolonged war on Gaza and Lebanon. Israeli media reports say the number of suicides may be even higher. The regime's military has so far refrained from releasing the official number of suicides despite repeated pledges to do so. The media also say thousands of forces have sought help from mental health clinics, with about one-third of those affected showing symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Thousands of Jordanians have once again held a protest slamming the Israeli regime's expansionist policies. Participants condemned the Israeli far-right minister's call for the annexing of the occupied West Bank. Zaid Akaba has a report on this story.
Thousands of Jordanians took part in a massive rally in Amman after Friday prayers, protesting Israel's recent statements about displacing Palestinians from the occupied West Bank. They condemned the remarks as part of the Zionist agenda to undermine the Palestinians' right to statehood.
The annexation of the West Bank is no longer a matter of isolated statements from extremists. It has become a central agenda of the Israeli regime. The U.S. administration clearly refuses to recognize that the West Bank is under occupation and the plans to displace Palestinians and annex the territory amounts to declaration of war on Jordan. The so-called two-state solution and peace settlement are now effectively dead. Incoming U.S. President Donald Trump has explicitly stated that Israel is small and needs to be expanded. We reaffirm our unity in opposing the Zionist agenda and rejecting these dangerous schemes.
Participants in the rally organized by the Islamic movement in Jordan under the slogan Annexation of the West Bank, a declaration of war on Jordan, warned against the potential evacuation of certain areas in the occupied territories, similar to the situation in Gaza. They also raised concerns about Israeli threats to Jordan, stressing the need to strengthen the internal front in response to these challenges.
In this march, we reaffirm our rejection of the far-right Israeli cabinet's plans, including the annexation of the occupied West Bank and the Judaization of Al-Quds. It is imperative that all ties with this Israeli entity be severed, and our internal front must be strengthened to prepare for confronting this aggression and the regime's expansionist ambitions.
We are here to deliver several messages, including one to the international community. Israel's decision to annex the West Bank is, politically, a declaration of war on Jordan and an attempt to reshape the West Asia by displacing Palestinians in the West Bank and dissolving the Palestinian Authority. We must confront this looming threat and firmly state that we will not allow such actions.
Participants condemned the statements of certain Israeli officials and denounced their racist, inflammatory, and extremist comments that advocate for Israeli sovereignty over the occupied West Bank and the expansion of settlements. Jordanians continue to protest against Israel's atrocities, condemning the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in Gaza and severe violations of the Wadi Araba Treaty. Zaid Agarbe, Amman.
Millions of Yemenis have taken to the streets across the country to once again condemn the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip and voice solidarity with the Lebanese people. Yusuf Mari reports from Sana'a.
The streets of Sana'a came alive once again as hundreds of thousands of Yemenis poured in to protest against the Israeli genocide in Gaza. The demonstrators were united not only in their condemnation of the Israeli regime, but also in their outrage at the United States' veto of a UN Security Council draft resolution that demanded an immediate and unconditional ceasefire in Gaza. Many Yemenis see this as a blatant betrayal of justice and a green light for further Palestinian suffering.
The American veto is nothing new. They are the architects of the aggression in Gaza, Lebanon, and now the Red Sea. The West has sponsored this Zionist regime since World War II with the goal of occupying Muslim lands.
The Ansar Allah resistance movement revealed during the rally that its fighters had successfully targeted Israel's Nevatim airbase in the southern Negev region.
The missile force of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a precise operation targeting the Nevatim military airbase linked to the Israeli enemy using a Palestine 2 hypersonic ballistic missile. The operation successfully achieved all its objectives.
The weekly protests, coupled with Yemen's growing military actions, signal the country's commitment to actively supporting Palestine and Lebanon, both politically and militarily.
The leader of the Ansar Allah movement has urged the Muslim world to take action in order to end the Israeli genocide of Palestinians and achieve complete liberation of the Muslim world from Western domination. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says Tehran will significantly increase its nuclear enrichment capacity in response to a resolution adopted by the UN's nuclear watchdog. Behrouz Kamalvandi said Tehran plans to install new advanced centrifuges for that purpose. He added that the development and consolidation of the country's nuclear infrastructure is also on the agenda. Kamalvandi stressed that Iran's nuclear industry will not be affected by Western pressure, and such hostile measures will only prompt the country to increase its capacity across various areas of the industry. The anti-Iran resolution by the International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors was adopted on Thursday. Tehran has strongly condemned the move as politically motivated, saying it will destroy the positive atmosphere that governs Iran's relations with the IAEA. Russian President Vladimir Putin vows more combat test firing of an experimental hypersonic missile fired at Ukraine on Thursday. Vladimir Putin said the tests will depend on the situation and character of the security threats Russia may face. He said Russia would also begin serial production of the new weapon. The new escalation follows Kiev's use of American and British missiles capable of striking deeper into Russia. In Kiev, the parliament cancelled its usual questions to the government on Friday over fears of a new Russian strike. Ukraine says it's looking for updated air defense systems from their allies in response to the new threats posed by Moscow. Meanwhile, Kiev's forces are struggling on the ground. On Friday, Russia claimed the capture of another village in eastern Ukraine. And that's it for this hour's bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Divided on critical issues, European nations and the EU generally face an uncertain future. The economic conditions are dire for many. The social embodiment of these problems, particularly in terms of growing hostility toward migration, feeds a feverish political environment that destabilizes institutions and elites. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Global Times wrote, tied into a war in Ukraine, confused about its identity and autonomy, the European political establishment has consigned EU member states to a period of considerable perturbation. The Eurozone economies are being buffeted by major headwinds. Hampered by high energy costs, Eurozone economies are witnessing industrial hollowing out as energy-intensive industries shudder. How EU member states individually and collectively deal with present impasse will determine the the medium-term prosperity and security of the zone's citizens. In the face of its myriad challenges, the EU is showing signs of fragmentation. There are doubts about the European Commission's capacity to build a genuine and robust sense of common purpose. This is apparent across all key policy vectors: the Ukraine war, migration, and industrial development. The unquestioned commitment to the war in Ukraine is now being questioned. The loss of low-cost Russian gas and oil is rampant. Mario Draghi's recent report to the European Commission on European competitiveness acknowledges the centrality of energy costs, but did not dare name the role played by the EU and American sanctions against Russian energy. Voters are angry at the cost of the war in terms of local industries, jobs, and the adverse impact on the cost of living. Many in Europe increasingly want peace through negotiations. Hungarian and Slovakian leaders have spoken out against the continuation of the war, despite coming under intense pressure from the political mainstream. The dominant establishment view from Brussels is to continue arming the Ukrainians. A schism is apparent, not just among political leaders. Since the start of the Russia military operation in February 2022, an estimated 6 million or more Ukrainians have fled into Europe. While welcome at first, there are increasingly more signs that the refugees are beginning to overstay their welcome. The Ukraine conflict and Europe's economic problems are interrelated, resulting in increasingly high energy costs. The German economy has been in protracted stagnation. As the beating heart of European industry, the rest of the Eurozone isn't doing much better. The Eurozone as a whole is expected to achieve GDP growth of around 1% this year. With economic woes and concerns about migration, voters turn toward anti-immigration and anti-war candidates. European nations' responses to proposed tariffs on Chinese-made electric vehicles is further evidence of growing schisms across the region. The European Commission initiated a closed-door inquiry into alleged subsidies for Chinese manufacturers, resulting in proposals to impose a range of tariffs. At a vote of the 27 member states, the proposal for tariffs was supported by 10 nations, 5 opposed to the tariffs, and 12 abstained. The Commission proceeded to impose the tariffs anyway, despite the overwhelming majority of member states not supporting them. The UK, while no longer a member of the EU, is also on the cusp of economic challenges. The new Labour government's austerity measures are more likely to exacerbate the economic woes than to alleviate them, while already leading to a collapse in the administration's public standing. Divided on critical issues, European nations and the EU generally face an uncertain future. The economic conditions are dire for many. The social embodiment of these problems, particularly in terms of growing hostility toward migration, feeds a feverish political environment that destabilizes institutions and elites. Without addressing the elephant in the room, namely resolving the energy uncompetitiveness problem, European economic policy is likely to be piecemeal. Without a coherent long-term vision, the tensions between protectionists and others are likely to continue for the foreseeable future. French President Emmanuel Macron once said that Europe will not be a geopolitical priority for the US. Like before, Macron laments the loss of European autonomy. And like before, there seems to be little clarity about the root causes of Europe's confusion and discomfort. Meanwhile, and as a consequence, the social-political situation across Western Europe is likely to become more volatile.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Iran Radio. A very warm welcome. You are listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is your host Zainab. And with me is joining Brother Liaquat Abbas. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
And a very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Well, in this program, we listen to your curious questions and discuss the very pressing topics of Islamic upbringing so that it can help you nurture the faith in your children from the very beginning. And the answers are rooted in the Holy Book of Quran and the traditions of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and the narrations from noble imams. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon them. Well, we have been discussing the compassionate and kind behavior that we learned from the lives of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasallam, and how teens can apply that in their lives, and even how parents can apply that in their lives. Brother Liaquat has been discussing this with us. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, sister Rahmatullah.
Again, a very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
And if we have anything else to add to the compassionate and kind behavior, there should be, because compassionate behavior is not easy to earn. Mm-hmm. And the more examples we discuss here, the more it feels related, the mm-hmm. more it feels tangible.
Perfect. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I was speaking about people who are harsh in Husseiniya or Imam Bada or Ashurkhana, or there are different names, or Masajid in Masjid, yeah? So compassionate or kindness example, the definition of kindness itself is the quality of being friendly, generous, and considerate, yeah? So this quality of being friendly should be there in all those elders, I would say, who are harsh towards the younger ones, okay? Why? Because if this continues, example, they were kids and they are kids who don't like to come inside masjid, who don't like to come inside a Husseiniya, who don't like to come inside a majlis. Why? Because the child is frightened because of person X. Example, this person, this elderly man, he shouts at him and he's like, and he scolds him in front of everyone. He humiliates him, you see? For which is the reason, of course, this child, because of being scared of that person and becoming shy in front of his parents, would not tell even his parents, why don't I want to go to majlis? And he always finds a reason not to go towards majlis. And you see, like, this can fall under the category of sin for this elderly man.
Right.
Why? Because a big ni'mah, that is majlis of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, or the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam, is being deprived from the child, you
right.
see? because the child is afraid. Yeah. So example, I would say this particular quality. If someone sees this particular quality in an elderly person, then it is important upon that person to convey this message to that elderly man in any manner possible. Example, through that Maulana or Sheikh of that Masjid. Okay, in order that Maulana can say a few things from the
indirectly
member, example,
or directly.
Right, indirectly. Or to the family who is related to this elderly man. Or if you know that the elderly person is going to listen from his friend.
Okay.
Then, of course, keeping the identity anonymous. Yeah. So telling the elderly man is very important over here. Why? Because he is shouting at people and like there are cases where they are being deprived of, example. Yeah. So this quality of friendliness should be adopted very strictly, I would say. And being kind or generous or compassionate towards our younger ones and our older ones, I would say, is also very important. So this happens mostly in siblings, you see. Also like kindness in family members with regards to siblings is something which in today's world is not considered too important. Normally within siblings, they hit, they scream at each other, they fight. And of course, they get friendly along again. But this thing is there, like not being kind towards each other. And they fight a lot. And of course, there are families where the siblings are kind towards each other as well, okay?
And they get along.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
And so, what else? We'll discuss that after a short break. Dear listeners, don't go anywhere. Stay tuned.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. Take hold of your iman. Don't give in to Shaitan. Oh, you who believe, please give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafoor, Allahu Rahim, Allahu Yuhibbul Muhsinin, wa Khaliquna, wa Rasiquna, wa Huwa ala kulli shay'in.
Welcome back. You're listening to Iran Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaquat is with us and we are discussing the kind and compassionate behavior that should be practiced when it comes to the teen's upbringing. So firstly, you said whosoever is holding the majalis in the, or maybe in the mosques or Imam Varga, whatever we have, the Husseiniyah, and any religious gathering, wherever possible, the elderly should take care of their behavior. They should not be rude or shouting at the teens so that they do not deprive them of coming into the religious gatherings again. Mm-hmm. And the process also goes vice versa. Teens indeed, also have indeed. To be respectful.
Definitely. So being kind towards the elders and also the younger ones, and being kind towards siblings is also very important. The best example, what I can relate among siblings, is from the family of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wassalam. If we see Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wassalam, brothers being kind to each other. Imam Hassan being kind to Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam. Imam Hussein being kind to his younger brother, Hazrat Abbas alayhi salatu wassalam. Imam Hussein and Hassan alayhi salam being kind towards their sister, Sayyidah Zainab, salamullah alayha, and also Sayyidah Umm Kulsum, salamullah alayha as well. You see? And the sisters being kind towards their brothers. So this family, like amongst all the others, of course there are other imams who have brothers and like...
Sisters and
when it comes to brother and sister, the other family, like from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi muslim, the relationship between the brother and sister, which is very eye-catching, is Imam al-Rida alayhi salam with his sister, Sayyidah Fatima Masuma, salamullah alayha, yeah? And the relationship, the bond which they had amongst, like, between themselves is really something so beautiful that it brings tears in the lowers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi muslim, in the eyes of the lovers of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, you see.
And she has been so kind and compassionate towards her brother that the Imam Ra'uf himself gives her the title Masuma, although she was not called Masuma throughout her life.
Yeah.
But she calls, but he gives her the title Masuma.
Indeed, like, you know, this is one of those places where a Masum is calling another person Masum again, right. You see. If we see Sayyidah Masuma salamu alayha, of course, she has a very big stage. She's not the Imam, if we see. She's not amongst the 14, yeah?
Right.
Amongst the 14 infallibles, yeah? And but she is called as an infallible by an infallible.
Right.
So when an infallible, a sinless person, says someone, this person is sinless, then that person who is called sinless is definitely sinless, definitely, without a doubt, you see. So that's one of the reasons why Sayyidah Masuma sallallahu alayha, she has got a very high status near Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in a manner that Imam Radha alayhi salam, he tells about his sister that she has the maqam or the status of intercession for her Shias inside paradise.
Right.
This is something else, you see. The intercession is normally on the day of judgment for someone who's going to enter hellfire, you see. Like a person is going to enter hellfire, the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi Muslim, example, Imam Ali is going to come and he's going to say, okay, oh Allah, don't make this person enter hellfire. Rather, make him enter paradise. But in paradise, there are stages, you see, like stage 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on, yeah. So a person is in stage 10, he wants to go to 1, and say the Masuma is over there to help us.
Right. We'll discuss more with you, brother. Let's take a short break here, and we'll be back in a while.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
Regarding the saying of Allah the Exalted, U anfusakum wa ahlikum nara. Save yourselves and your family from a fire. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, teach yourselves and your family righteousness.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Iran Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaquat is here with me, and we're discussing the compassionate and kind behavior that we learn from the lives of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, that the teens should learn towards their parents and towards their siblings.
Yes, sister. So I was saying about the maqam of Sayyidah Masuma salamu alayha, and it's not because that she is the sister of Imam Ar-Radha alayhi salam. It's not because she is the daughter of Imam Kazim alayhi salam or the aunt of Imam Muhammad Taqi al-Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam. It's not because of this. It's because of the relationship which she had towards her father or brother or even Imam Jawad alayhi salatu wasalam. You see, when she was even in her teens, we know that Imam Kazim alayhi salatu wasalam was taken away from Sayyidah Masuma when she was a teen. Yeah? And from then onwards, she was completely with her brother, under the guidance of her brother. And never would she disobey Imam Ar-Radha alayhi salatu wasalam. Of course, she's a teen, Sayyidah Masuma, but we see the obedience is at the maximum level. Of course, yeah, she knows that he is the Imam, okay? The future Imam, because Imam Al-Kazim is still alive. Of course, he has been imprisoned. Imam Kazim is in prison. But the very fact that Imam Ar-Radha alayhi salam is her brother and the present guide, she knows that she has to obey him. And of course, he's better than her over here. Yeah.
Well, before the point obedience comes over here, something that's really eye-catching and something that's really something that's really important to discuss here is that we have teens who are deprived of fathers. We have teens who feel the tragic situations, and they make these tragic situations the excuse to degrade themselves, to degrade their own lives, to go on the wrong path.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And the story of Lady Masuma salamu alayha that we discussed right now shows that it's not justified.
Indeed, definitely, definitely. Over here, the brother is protecting her sister. Like, the brother is protecting
the teenager is not making an excuse. See, like, I was in this kind of situation. My father was imprisoned, so I didn't have my father over there to take care of me. So that's why I just, went astray and all. Hey, mm-hmm. Lady Masa Masalam is teaching us, even in tragic situations, it is indeed possible, you know, to be obedient, to be patient.
And to be on the right path.
To be on the right path, to reach a level where an imam is calling you masoom.
Indeed, definitely, definitely, sister. So, like, even in the lives of Imam Hassan, alayhi salam, Imam Hussein, and Sayyidah Zainab, Sayyidah Mughulsum, Hazrat Abbas, alayhi salatu wassalam, we see the same thing going on, yeah? And even in the lives of Hazrat Qasim, alayhi salam, and Hazrat Abdullah, the sons of Imam Hassan, alayhi salatu wassalam, you see, the same compassion and kindness is being shown, yeah? The feeling of being pity, being sympathy towards one another. So this is something like which should be happening in our families. But unfortunately, when a brother or sister fight with each other, like the siblings fight with each other, their parents, who love this quality, they would laugh, they would also cheer up, and of course they would stop them, but they are like, they're chill, it's completely okay,
it's
to
okay.
Hit each other, yeah. Unfortunately,
and I also saw some,
there are limits, yeah, right. There are limits again which needs to be discussed though.
That's inshallah, we'll discuss all those in the upcoming episodes.
Inshallah.
Thank you for being
thank
with
you.
us. Thank you, dear listeners. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish. Khalida Jarar's family and lawyer revealed the deadly conditions faced by the iconic Palestinian leader in an Israeli regime prison. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Palestinian leader Khalida Jarar has been held under administrative detention in Israeli occupation prisons without charge or trial since her arrest from her home in Ramallah on December 26, 2023. The Handala Center for the Rights of Prisoners and Ex-Prisoners recently reported that Jarar, detained in Ramla prison, is facing a systematic Israeli campaign of repression and abuse that endangers her life. Since August, Jarrah has also been subjected to solitary confinement by the Israeli occupation authorities. A prominent leader of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP, and a key national figure in the occupied West Bank, Jarrah has been arrested by Israel multiple times. During her imprisonment in 2019, she suffered a devastating loss when her daughter Soha passed away at the age of 31 on July 13, 2021. Despite international appeals, the Israeli occupation authorities denied Jarrah the chance to bid her daughter farewell. The 62-year-old leader, who suffers from health problems, has seen her condition worsen due to harsh imprisonment conditions and deliberate medical negligence by the Israeli regime prison administration. Jarrah has spent 5.5 years in Israeli regime prisons to date, alternating between administrative detention and formal charges. On August 13th, the prison administration abruptly transferred her to solitary confinement in Nev Tirza prison in Ramallah without justification, her sister Salam Rashoud told the Palestine Chronicle. Salam said she suffers from high blood pressure, diabetes, and narrowed arteries in her head. She was suddenly told to prepare herself and then was transferred from Daman prison for women in conditions that are, to say the least, terrible. During the third week of her isolation, Jarrah's lawyer was able to visit her. Jarrah described her condition as being held in a grave. She explained that her narrow cell includes an inside toilet with no water, has no windows or ventilation holes, and lacks sufficient food and medical treatment. The bed in her cell is a concrete slab with a thin mattress, forcing her to sleep on the floor. Her diabetes condition is further aggravated as she is served uncooked food, Salam added. A former member of the Palestinian Legislative Council and an activist, Jarrah has faced immense personal loss during her years of imprisonment. In addition to losing her daughter, she was also unable to bid farewell to her father in 2022. Less than a month after her release, in September 2022, her mother passed away. Salam said, "Prisoners spend their entire lives in detention without knowing what their charge is. Neither international institutions nor laws have succeeded in forcing Israel to end this injustice." The Handala Center confirmed that Jarrah has endured extremely harsh conditions during 93 days of solitary confinement. The center stated, "The freedom fighter finds nothing but to lie down next to the door, a place where she can breathe with the least amount of oxygen, in a tragic scene that reflects the cruelty to which the prisoners are exposed." The center has called for urgent intervention by international and human rights organizations to save Jarrah and other Palestinian prisoners in Israeli regime prisons. Al-Damir Foundation for Human Rights revealed that the Israeli occupation authorities recently extended Jarrah's solitary confinement for another month, bringing her isolation into its third month. Her lawyer quoted her as saying, "I am dying every day. The cell is like a small closed box that doesn't allow air to enter. There is only a toilet in the cell and a small window above it, which was closed one day after I was transferred. They didn't leave me any breathing space, and there is only a small opening that I sit next to most of the time to breathe. I'm suffocating in my cell, and I'm waiting for hours to pass so that I may find oxygen molecules to breathe and stay alive." Jarrah further described her ordeal. "What increased the tragedy of my isolation was the high temperatures. In short, I'm inside an oven at the highest temperature. I cannot sleep because of the high heat. and they were not satisfied with isolating me under these conditions. Arrests like Jarrah's are often used by the Zionist regime to remove Palestinian leaders from the political scene for extended periods. Administrative detention, which allows for imprisonment without charge or trial, can be renewed indefinitely at the discretion of the Israeli regime authorities. International laws oppose administrative detention, a practice the Zionist regime inherited from the British Mandate. Despite this, Israel continues to employ it, flagrantly violating international law. Legal expert Issam Abdin, who has worked with the Al-Haq Human Rights Organization, explained to the Palestine Chronicle that administrative detention constitutes two crimes, a war crime and a crime against humanity. He emphasized that Israeli occupation courts justified this form of detention under the pretext of war, which is a severe breach of international law. There are more than 30 racist laws targeting Palestinians currently being discussed in the Israeli Knesset, Abdin said. One of these laws seeks to expand the scope of administrative detention and amend the orders of the prison service, driven by the extremist far-right Minister of National Security, Itamar Ben-Gvir. Abdin concluded, "Unfortunately, the arrest request for the Israeli leaders from the International Criminal Court didn't include what is happening in Israeli prisons and detention centers, which is shocking and a stark indicator of double standards."
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
الله يا الله سبحان الله الله يا الله والحمد لله الله ولا إله
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from iranradio.ir Well, in this program what we do is to talk about some of the viewpoints and sentences of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, who was the great founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and then try to shed light and talk about some of the points in these statements. About purification of the soul, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, "A knowledge which would draw man closer to God in a worldly soul brings him far distant from the place of Almighty. Even the knowledge of divine unity or tawheed, if it is for anything other than God, it becomes a cover of darkness, for it is a preoccupation with that which is other than God." Well, here Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi is talking about the danger of knowledge for a worldly soul. Every soul that continues to purify itself of evil tendencies and self-love receives angelic inspirations. The knowledge it then acquires is the true godly knowledge because it guides him to perform virtuous deeds and leads him towards the nearness of God. This real knowledge is the guiding spiritual lamp that shows him the straight path to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and to the abode of his bliss. A soul that is predominated by self-love and evil tendencies receives inspirations that are satanic in character, leading it to compound ignorance and obscuring veils that make it blind to the realities of the divine purpose of creation, the essence of God, and the life of hereafter. So, whatever knowledge it acquires directs it to pursue worldly aims, selfish motives and evil actions, and ultimately leading it to hell.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi.
Sallallahu alayhi.
Salli ala.
Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Verily, knowledge consists of these three: the firm sign, the just duty, and established sunnah or method. All else is superfluous." The expression "firm sign" implies the rational science and the true doctrines, the divine teachings. Just duty implies the science of ethics and self-purification. And established sunnah refers to the sciences with materialistic aspects and involving some kind of physical activity. And at times, acquiring knowledge becomes just duty, and at other times, it becomes as established sunnah. And in short, what Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh wants us to know is that the knowledge that you acquire should guide you to be more virtuous, perform sincere actions, and make you love and fear of God more concrete and make you progress. Knowledge that does not lead one to perform good actions is not true knowledge. Knowledge that is limited to words and devoid of practical applications to severe creatures of God is the lowest level of knowledge and is lost with time. Okay, dear listeners, that was the time we had for this episode of Spring of the Truth. For ending, let me just recite the sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi about purification of the soul once more. He said, "A knowledge which would draw man closer to God in a worldly soul brings him far distant from the place of Almighty. Even the knowledge of divine unity or tawhid, if it is for anything other than God, it becomes a cover of darkness, for it is a preoccupation with that which is other than God." Thank you very much for listening to us, and until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's unrelenting attacks kill more women and children across Gaza, raising the death toll from the regime's genocide to over 44,000. Iran says the all-out support of Washington in international bodies has emboldened the Israeli regime and given it impunity to carry on with its crimes. And people in Jordan have held a mass rally to condemn Israel's expansionist policies in the occupied West Bank.